All right. So, Lunatard time. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Jersey.
You feeling rested? You feel recuperated? You ready to do this thing again? You took some time off.
I did. Took a few days off. Yep. I think it was like an extended weekend, Thursday through Monday. Pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just hung out on the shore of a big lake. You may call it a Superior Lake.
It is a Superior Lake. It's a very cold lake where you were. I'm sure it was still cold even in August.
Oh yeah. Some over exuberant folks do jump into it still. And some do that in the middle of winter, actually. I happen to know a few people that live up there, and they pay each other money to jump into that thing in winter times.
So. I went up to Lake Superior in September a few years back. September, mind you. And I saw a man walk into the lake and just go for a leisurely swim at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, that is a man. That is 100% man. He wasn't screaming. He wasn't like how I would be, like, oh God, no. It was just like, I'm going for a swim. Anyway, welcome to the Lunatic Art Show, where we talk about a whole bunch of visual storytelling stuff and art lifestyle and the thing kind of things we struggle with every day behind the desk as visual storytellers, people who are trying to communicate visually. And without further ado, we got to kick into curveball. Rob, you have the curveball this week.
Yeah, well, I was doing a little bit of the overthinking ritual, which I actually don't think is a bad ritual at all. And I actually think it's, I'm being silly even calling it overthinking. I think it's useful to analyze, but then I was wondering why I do that, because I've been in the habit of recording many Polytechnicast and releasing just a couple once in a while. And I was thinking why I do it, because I noticed I actually really, I get a lot of benefit out of it, even if I'm not publishing them all. Because I'm sort of refining how I think about certain things, whatever. And I thought sort of two things that I'm curious, like how this happened for you, Jersey. Both the why do you unbox things, and then sort of on the not just the why, like in it just a really simple but what caused that to happen, right? There's sort of a circumstance that I think might be there surrounding the why.
Ooh, interesting. Interesting. Because, I had a why at the ready, but you made it extra complicated when you said, what's the circumstance that led up to you asking or starting to unbox this stuff?
Exactly.
Because in the past, this is something where I've argued with other cartoonists or other, you know, artists of any stripe, is some people say, well, I'm not a 1,000-foot guy. I'm not or gal. I'm not the kind of person who could step back and look at the big picture and kind of start looking at things as how they're fitting together and then zoom in and look at all the individual pieces. It's just an intuitive act. And I don't stop to wonder why. I'm too busy doing to wonder why. Perfectly legitimate standpoint. But then that raises the question, well, how come I'm always asking why, right? It's tough to say, except that I guess I've always had a predisposition for people who talk about the meta content in anything, you know? Grew up on things like Cosmos, Carl Sagan. Everybody loves that series, right? Mm-hmm. A guy who just, he tried to glamorize science by telling stories about people who made breakthroughs and really... What's the fancy word for hagiography? Isn't that it? When you tell the story of somebody from the past and really kind of elevate them up onto a plateau of like what a hero Johannes Kepler was or Tycho Brahe was because of the things they struggled with in order to make these achievements and how we've all benefited from that achievement after the fact. And then things like, you know, reading Joseph Campbell as a kid, who I've quoted extensively on this show and many others. But the earliest memory I can think of that makes me think that, well, it started me on in this path of thinking about why, is when I was a kid, my old man would watch cartoons with me on Saturdays. And after the show, he would talk about it with me. And I don't know if that was something where he was being calculated about what he was doing. I think it was probably he was just enjoying spending time with his kid. But he would talk with me about the show and like what characters on the show and why did you like this guy and not that guy. And it was really this kind of, it wasn't like this didactic pedagogy or anything like that. It was just talking with his kid, right? But I noticed that all throughout my childhood, I would spend, you know, lots of time creating characters with my friends and really thinking hard about the characters and writing up extensive biographies of the characters, nerd stuff, right? Like what you do with D&D, what you do with any kind of role-playing system. You write, just like how like some kids were nerdy about baseball stats. Some kids knew that, well, this is Kirk Gibson's batting average and this is his career record and whatever kind of stats you follow on a baseball player. That's the kind of stuff I was thinking about with cartoon or comic book characters and cartoon characters. So it was always there in a what's the word for it, nascent or I don't know what the word
for it. It was gestational. That habit was there in some form.
Yeah, and whenever I was really curious about something, I just wanted to know more about it and I wanted to understand it. So I don't want to say like, oh, I was just born to do that, because that's like saying that I was born to be insufferable. But it's something I've always had fun thinking about. But it's not anything where it's constructed, where I don't think it's like an exercise where I sit up and I go like, okay, I finished a project, now it's time to sit down and reflect. I mean, that's something I have to sort of cajole myself into doing, if that makes any sense. It's not something where it's like it's a ritualistic kind of thing that I just am compelled to do. It's something that I force myself to do after the fact and think really hard about. And in the back of my brain, it usually is kind of like ticking around all day long. I don't know about you, but my brain is not quiet during the day.
Yeah, that's definitely the case for me as well. Especially if I'm, it's funny. It depends on the task. And if I'm on a task where my brain isn't sort of locked in and trying to push some kind of load towards solving something or whatnot, it's wandering off somewhere, saying whatever, call me when you need me.
I mean, I don't want to push this out as any kind of idea of me being some kind of great undiscovered thinker. It's more like I think most people have very noisy minds, and it's tough for me to shake loose things that are nagging at me. Why did that, you know, it's like something we've talked about in the show a lot of times and on past shows, like before Lean Into Art, was the analytic eye. Whenever you see something that makes you feel something, you have to stop and say, why? Why did it make me feel that thing? Because I want to know, because I want to I want to eat it and absorb its power.
Exactly.
So
I think that using that metaphor, I think I realized at a certain point when it was after I was in my sort of software design and development career, that I couldn't describe why and how I came up with certain things, just from needing to explain them and not in a defensive way, but to defend choices or present choices as how they could be defended. Because when you're making things in a big ecosystem, people question from a technology standpoint, wondering like, well, why did you choose that versus this? Because I just prefer this. And in order to get past me, you must, you know, completely explain, convince me why this is possible, or that you chose not to go this route, right? And others who are just saying, well, why should we do this? And tell me how it makes sense from a monetary standpoint. Like, we're investing this money, and I needed to be able to take things that were pretty intuitive to me and then make them explainable and portable. And so it was like I was reacting to an environmental concern. I mean, in part, I mean, sure, I love to watch the heck out of some edutainment television, especially things like James Burke's Connection series.
You've mentioned this on the show before, yeah?
Yeah, I wore the heck out of my VHS tape versions of those.
What was that series called again?
Connections. Connections 2 and Connections 3 in particular. The old one is it's funny. I actually couldn't get through a couple of episodes because James Burke was, I don't know. He just was, later on, he mellows out a little bit and he's more excited and wondering and exploring, where I think he's kind of mad at what humankind has done in the first few, and they bummed me out. So I was like, nah, I can't check these out right now. But you know, I'm into you know, some fun learning, not some depressing facts. So
yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I wanted to be able to to do that, and so it honestly, I think it was in response to a need. And then realizing, like, holy moly, I couldn't tell you why I decided this. I just sort of absorbed heuristics without being able to express them. And I think a lot of people are in that position. They don't need to do anything different because they're great at their job. And needing to address it from a different angle to be able to transmit what they're doing and why they're doing it and how they're doing it, that's a different concern that not every circumstance warrants.
Absolutely. When you're working as a freelance illustrator or working as a contract employee, well, even if you're a contract employee, actually, there are benefits to being able to put words to what you're thinking and why you're doing what you're doing. Case in point is that I do a lot of meetings with groups of people as I partner with different organizations for things like Kids Read Comics, partnering with organizations for my teaching work, and having a clear sense of what I'm trying to accomplish, what my core mission is, makes it easier to encounter negotiations. For instance, I was at a recent meeting where someone said, hey, should we invite X organization into this particular party that we're putting together, this particular event that we're putting together? And I looked at what that organization did, and their mission was not immediately clear to me that it was about art advocacy. They would be a value add in the sense that they would be a fun partner to have, but I saw nothing in their body of copy or in their website or in the way they operate that says, we really are about art advocacy too. So it was very easy for me to say, well, they would be a fun partner, but I'm not seeing anything here about art advocacy. This thing's about art advocacy. So if they want to come on bring an advocacy angle to what they normally do, I'll think about it. But if not, then they're really not bringing any value outside of being a fun partner in this thing. So it was really easy for me and in a few seconds to be able to talk about it without having to say, I'll think about it. Let me get back to you in a couple of days. Because I have a clear idea of what I'm trying to accomplish, and I wouldn't have that if I didn't sit around and unbox, why am I doing what am I doing, right? Somebody asked me, why is it so important to you to have professional development workshops at Kids Read Comics? And I was able to respond to that right away because I've thought about it really long and hard. So, you know, it is nerdy. It is obsessive. It is overthinking. It's also, as they're saying in the chat, a busy mind is a worried mind. Yes. I sweat a lot of stuff, as does anybody who cares about what they do. And being Zen is having a quiet mind? Yes, absolutely. And Rob just went on a little mini trip to get back in his Zen mind, beginner's mind a little bit, right? But I think that, you know, it's not necessarily, we're sort of making our thesis case for why we do the Lean Into Art cast, but I think it's appropriate to do it for the 50th episode. Happy 50th episode, by the way, Rob.
That's funny. Happy 50th, Jersey. I can't believe it's only been 50, and I'm amazed that.
And I can't believe
it feels like a lot more.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's cool. We made it to that that milestone. I like hitting big numbers with creative projects. Feels good.
And me without a Pepperidge Farm cake. So. Curveball out of the way. Do you feel satisfied? Do you feel satiated? Do you feel like we said a few things that amounted to things with that, Rob?
We certainly did. I acknowledge our effort, and I'm never satisfied.
All right. So, yeah.
No, actually, good stuff. Let's rock.
Okay, so let's talk about some tools stuff. Digital tools, automation tools. Sometimes I think it's okay to not do an episode where we sit here and we wring our hands about some philosophical concept that is really difficult to manage. Sometimes it might be fun just to say, here's some neat things that I found that are making my art productivity a little bit more easy or fun or interesting. Or here's a neat thing that presents some unique possibilities that gets me thinking about how, I just taught a Photoshop class today. I'm in the final week of my Comic Book Academy and Comics Fundamentals 7-week course at the Ann Arbor District Library, and it concludes with a huge four-part, 2-hour block sessions of digital coloring in Photoshop. And, you know, as I'm telling these people, both young and old, how different things are now than they were when I was first getting into computer coloring, you know, back in like 1994, 1995, when I was first starting to play around with it, back when I was using like Photoshop 3 or 4, you know, this was before CS, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes you realize that, you know, sometimes tips and tools can be pretty handy, because had I not discovered tips and tools along the way, I'd still be doing things the way I was doing it in Photoshop CS or Photoshop 3 back when, in order to, oh, I remember I had to do this really screwed up way of isolating something on its own layer by using clipping paths. Do you remember clipping paths, Rob?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember how I picked it up, but I had this really dumb way of using the pen tool and making a clipping path around an object in order to isolate it so that it was on a transparent background back in like 1994, 1995. And think about that compared to now, how easy it is to do such a thing with a magic wand tool. Zip, boom, it's not a transparent background, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Photoshop has come a long way. So yeah, I mean, we do tend to pick on, and we use diminutive language around tips. Yeah. And we even have like a recurring segment that pops up every once in a while. It's a non-predictable recurring segment called Stupid Helpy Tips.
Yes.
But you know, tips aren't all bad.
No, and I've tripped across some really interesting stuff going on in technology. Oh, I forgot to mention a book. We'll save the book for next time. I've just been stumbling across some new different kinds of things that are making my ubiquitous capture stuff a lot easier and making capturing things a lot happier for me. So I don't know who wants to go first. Do you want to go first? Do you want me just to drop the bomb and talk about that tablet that I got?
Well, that's the elephant on the tablet.
We've been going for 20 minutes and I haven't mentioned that tablet yet. And that's what I hinted at on Twitter. So.
It took like 20 minutes for us to start the episode because of excitement related to the tablet. So yeah, it's gotta be bubbling inside. Let's let it out.
Okay. So first let me just drop the bomb and just show the darn thing. So yes, I entered the Android world, Rob, and I got the Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1, I don't know. You can see. I mean, I got to do a video update with a full review of this thing in the near future because, I mean, a Google Hangout video, as great as it is not going to do this thing justice. Mm-hmm. But just to give, I'll give the quick specs on it real quick for those who are wondering what the heck I'm talking about if they haven't heard about it. And then I'm going to tell the story about why I looked this thing up and then what I found after using it. So it's a 10-inch tablet. It's about the size, a little bit taller than an iPad. It's about as thin and as light as the current iPads. Has a pen that slides out of the side or the back. Can I get it back in? Can I get it back in? There we go. And it has on the tablet a Wacom digitizer. So in other words, it is an iPad that has pressure sensitivity at long last. After all these years, we finally got a tablet PC, a tablet computer with pressure sensitivity, and it has a special version of Photoshop that has been optimized for this thing, and it can do a lot more than you might think a tablet version of Photoshop can do. I'll go into this in more detail in a second, but what got me to make the jump from the Apple ecosystem to the Android ecosystem? I mean, I was already curious. I was already hanging outside of the clubs looking, going like, oh, those gals are pretty cute. I don't know. But this one sent me over, this one just pushed me over the edge, and to the point where, I mean, a week and a half ago, I was like, well, I this thing looks cool, but I think I'm going to wait till September to see what Apple's going to do and before I push the plunger on this. I even contacted Samsung and said, hey, can I get a review unit? And I'll talk about it on my show. It's just, I want to try this thing out, and I think cartoonists would be interested in this thing. They didn't get back to me. I'm not a celebrity. Finally, after reading enough reviews, I went out and just pushed the button and bought it. And, you know, Best Buy has a 30-day return policy, so I figured it's not really that huge of a risk.
Well, no, wait a minute, though. Here's something I find really interesting about your, let's see, I think one way to describe this, like, so someone casually hearing your story, it sounds really similar to any case, and having been afflicted many times myself, kind of gadget lust, right? So yeah. There's this thing, oh my gosh, look at that thing. And if I had it, I could do these other things, and I can't wait. And it's really funny, but I actually think that there was something else where you had this sort of this hunch, like you went past all these different sort of experts that would possibly provide some new light, but none of it seemed to match your hunch. I mean, and so did you, it's interesting where.
No, good point.
Making
Rob.
A leap like that without a lot of signs, a lot of arrows pointing, yes, go forward.
Right.
You went forward anyway.
Well, yeah. And that, I think that's part of the story. And I think it's a good stopping point is gadget lust, because this is something that I have been victim of before. I bought for Anne. See, Anne's my excuse for everything. It's like I got her the first gen iPod in 2001. We still got the old FireWire thing. It's like the size of a brick, but at the time it was like, oh, it's so tiny, you can fit 1,000 songs on it. You know, I'm totally that guy. I got her the first gen iPad because I just had to get my hands on this thing, and I'll get it for her, and then I can play with it, right? Totally know that about myself. And so when I was just doing my cursory scanning of tech news, as I do, keeping on top of what's happening in the tech industry, and I saw this thing about the Galaxy Note tablet coming out, and then I just saw as an afternote in one of the articles about it, has a Wacom digitizer with 1,024 levels of pressure sensitivity. And when I got to that sentence, it was like I did one of those cartoon, what? Wait, did I just read that right? I just read that right. That says Wacom digitizer on it. How come nobody's talking about this? How come I haven't heard about this before? So I started an investigation, started reading every review on the device that I could find. And the problem is that these devices were only handed out to tech bloggers. What do tech bloggers do for a living, Rob? What do they spend most of their time doing for money?
Well, a lot of them, I can't, what's funny is exactly my little keyboard is kind of bound up here, but I was going to use it as a visual. They poke at these things called keys.
Yep, precisely.
and that's
not to diminish what they do, you know?
It's a different problem, though.
It's a completely different problem that they are looking to solve when they're looking at this thing. And some tech bloggers are better than others at anticipating what an audience would want. And sure. Granted, I will be the first to admit that it's possible that having really robust drawing software on a tablet may very well be a niche idea, right? If you're talking about you want to get this in the hands of hundreds of millions of people, yeah, odds are hundreds of millions of people aren't going to be terribly interested in pressure sensitivity on a tablet. But I'm betting a couple million might be. A couple million artists out there. I mean, when's the last time you did a scan of how many people are making webcomics? Here's a guy who has a tablet.
Exactly. So on my iPad, my sketch and paint category, I've got, and granted, there's some hybrid apps here, right? I mean, so some of them are about managing vectors, some are about managing pixels, but this sketch and paint folder on my iPad is full of the apps that I go to or that I'm currently trying to essentially make images, right? Mm-hmm. And Sketchbook Pro is by far and away the main one. And like, I think I have like, Sketchbook Pro has been around since, I believe, like early days of the iPad 1.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. I'm just going to my folder. Yeah, whatever I'm breaking. Some of these are copies and clones or whatever, but I have like 213 sketches in my, you know, it gets use. And, yep. And it's a serious tool. And I think they probably have some good sales to back it with, you know, Autodesk with this tool. And I'm sure some of the other, others as well, where I don't think that this is as niche-y as people tend to punditize, right?
I would be willing to guess something close to that too. Somebody's asking in the chat, do you use a pen when you do this stuff, Rob, or are you using your finger?
Yes.
Yeah, and I've used a bunch of different styluses or styli on the Anne's iPad. Like, I got the Pogo stylus. I tried out, and I wrote up a blog post about it a while back. One of the other ones with the more rubbery tips. But the thing is that the tablets are really not meant to receive the iPad is not meant to receive like really precise inputs, right? It's giving you, and plus because it doesn't have pressure sensitivity, it raises a whole other ball of wax with having to constantly go back and resizing your brush in order to do different things. People have found a way around it. People like Danny Jones of DannyDraws.com, she does some beautiful illustrations on the iPad. But anyway, going back to this whole
thing. Not to take away thunder from this other thing. And like, that's serious. Like, well, this is on a tablet where people are working around. I found it interesting to get over my fear of a lack of pressure sensitivity and to adapt to this other tool, that it is viable and it does work. But then to seriously, I can't imagine. Like, I know I would have probably just run outside screaming if I, you know, seeing a review that said, here's an awesome tablet that has pressure sensitivity, because you get used to it. Like, you've used it in your day-to-day workflow for years.
8 or 9 years.
Right? Yeah. And it's a critical tool as part of the being a digital artist.
Well, and the other thing is that pressure sensitivity has been part of my workflow actually going back to, like, you know, 2001 when I started working with a crow quill, right? Pressure sensitivity figures in largely right. Using a brush and a crow quill. So, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said for pressure sensitivity, and anybody who tries to talk me out of it saying, well, just use the tool right. That, you know, it's like, well, we also remember, I remember hearing you're holding the phone wrong if you lose the signal, you know, remember that old one?
Yeah, exactly. The, you know, I'm not a fan of like simple pat phrases like customer's always right. But the thing is, people are, you know, it's okay to have your preferences and quirks that, and when it's convenient for others to say, well, no, you don't need that. And then have others just fall in line and parrot that sentiment. But mm-hmm. No way. Like, if you've used pressure sensitivity for years and now you find it's capable. Okay. So, cause the other thing is like, so this tablet, you know, so the tablet form factor, do you wander around your house with your giant Mac on your lap?
Right.
No.
Right.
It changes things.
It totally changes things. And I'll get into that when I start talking about some of the things that I discovered after using this for a little bit. But going back to the research I did, is one of the things that really stunned me was after I read that sentence that said, Wacom digitizer, 1024 levels of pressure sensitivity, and I couldn't find anybody else on the internet talking about it. And I did lots of different kinds of searches, did lots of Boolean searches, trying to figure out who's talking about this thing. It seems like a lot of artists should be talking about this thing, because that's an exciting bit of news, unless this particular blogger is wrong. If it doesn't have a Wacom digitizer, then, you know. So then I went to the Samsung site, I did my research, and yes, indeed, it does have a Wacom digitizer on it. This thing does have pressure sensitivity. And I start reading more and more reviews, reading David Pogue, reading Harry McCracken, reading you know, TechCrunch, Mashable, all those different sites, reading everybody's reviews of things. Mm-hmm. And the time and time again, I came up to the part about the pressure sensitivity, and the blogger would say, it's neat, but it feels kind of like a gimmick. I mean, who wants a pen? And I'm going, I want a pen. I can't be the only guy who wants a pen, unless I'm crazy. It might be. I might be crazy. But it seems like this is a home run for cartoonists. When Axiotron came out with the mod book a few years back, that was a big freaking deal. But it was $2,500. And it was a MacBook. So it was what, 5-6 pounds for the thing?
Yeah. It's sizable.
And I mean, and it might have been even higher than $2,600 when it came out, because you were buying a full-on MacBook plus paying another premium to have that modification done to turn the screen into the main interface, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the price came down quite a bit after a year or so. Let's see. I think I got one back in, I don't know, early 2010 or late 2009, somewhere in there.
Okay.
But
But the fact that that company could exist showed that there was a demand for this kind of thing, right?
Oh, definitely. In
you're
the
not
face
the only
of
cartoonist
Apple
I know who had one of those or has one of those, right?
Yeah.
So
it's,
but
the demand is there.
So I did a ton of research, and part of it is, I mean, this thing is $500. I mean, with tax, I paid like $520-something for the thing. I don't have that kind of money just sitting around to just spend on a weekend splurging. I can't make a impulse buy to that number, right? So I got to make these decisions very carefully. So yeah, it was partially gadget lust that got me started. And then I started talking myself out of it because I couldn't find anybody talking about it as a digital performance device. And I was watching YouTube videos of people using it, and it was always just people doing like a simple sketch, not doing anything really complex. And I thought, well, maybe it's not there yet. Maybe I need to wait a year. So then finally, I went to the Best Buy in town, which is the only place that had it. And I asked the dude, I'm like, do you have a display model? No, we don't have a display model. This is one of the first times I've ever done this. I was like, could you just open up a box? Because I need to see this thing. Like, just open one up and just turn it on. I need to see this thing now, please. I pride myself on being a low maintenance customer, but this was one time where I was like, no, I'm not backing down from this one. I got to play with it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm playing with a thing, and I play with Photoshop on it, and I was, let me give you the review of Photoshop, and maybe I should just boot it up or load it up so I can show you guys. Not that you're going to be able to see all that well, because, I mean, this is, you know, Hangout video, but, okay. So there's Photoshop on this thing. See it okay?
Oh, yeah.
And maybe I should use cameraman to grab my camera for now. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, cameraman is this tool in Google Plus Hangouts that's not loading very fast, so that I can make sure that my video feed is the main video feed while I do this demo. And it's not going to load, so I'll just have to keep talking. But anyway, so I'm going to go ahead and just draw a few lines so you can see. What is going on? Could not complete the request. I hid the layer. There we go. Layer's on now. Okay. So this is something I was just doing some flatting on. And let's see if you can see how.
Oh.
Pressure sensitivity. I press a little harder. It's really speedy. It tracks really well. There's very little delay. And there's almost no delay, actually. You do very natural drawing with it. And you've got layers, you've got, you know, the lasso tool, the pen tool, or not the pen tool, the brush tool, which can also be turned into the pencil tool just by tightening up the hardness up to an insane degree. You have all the different, you have like the paint bucket and, you know, layer. Do you have layer functions in this?
As far as blending modes and stuff, you mean?
I'm trying to remember if there's blending. I've only had it for a couple days. Yep. Yeah. You have blending modes on it. And it does just about everything that I use on a regular basis in Photoshop, but it's sort of optimized for a tablet interface. And this is the part that's interesting, is when I thought about the Modbook, I was like, well, how does this do any better than a Modbook? Because a Modbook has a full version of Photoshop, a full version of OS X on it, but it's not tablet optimized, whereas this is. And so there's a lot of little things, little changes that they've done with it where I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty convenient for when you're using a pen on a screen and don't have any text interface or a mouse interface, right? That's a nice touch what they did. But this version of Photoshop was made specifically or modified specifically for Android tablets, and it comes free on the thing. Plus, it gives you, you use Adobe Creative Cloud with it so that I can, whatever I'm working on my Mac, I started working on a couple different bigger illustrations, saved them to the Adobe Creative Cloud. Boom, they were available on my tablet. And there I was watching TV with my wife on the couch, and I'm flatting while I'm doing that. And it wasn't the least bit uncomfortable because this thing is so light, right? Real quick, because people are probably wondering. Believe the reviews when you read about build quality. I mean, this is a plastic back, and it's kind of, you know, squishy.
Okay.
You know? So if you're used to iPads with that wonderful aluminum back, and it feels like this thing's, you know, it's just almost bulletproof, this feels a little bit chintzier by comparison. Screen resolution, people are wondering about that. It's, if you look on the specs on the Samsung site, it's 1280 by 800. It's about the resolution of the first iPad. It's not Retina. The camera on the back is it's kind of high def. It can shoot 720p video if that's your thing. Can't shoot 1020 or 1080p, right? But it's got a good amount of RAM. It's got a good processor in it. The way I broke it down, to put it in very simply, as a cartoonist who's used it for a few days and messed around and ran it through its paces, what you lose, Retina display. You lose a little bit of build quality. I'm definitely getting a case for this thing. But what you gain is whack on pressure sensitivity, right? I can draw on this thing. Now, here's the other thing. In terms of, people are going to ask, well, what kind of lines do you get out of it? And it's hard to show on the video on here. And like I said, I want to do a full YouTube video review of this thing later. It doesn't feel like whatever translating that Photoshop is doing is that it's really getting the most graceful, beautiful line in the entire world. It does get a little bit bubbly at times, and it takes a little bit of practice to really get under the hood of the pressure sensitivity on it, because it's different working on glass than working on, say, you know, a traditional Wacom tablet, sure. Right? But once you get under the hood of that, and once you get used to that, you can get some pretty decent lines on it. But there's other note apps on the device that are configured to be able to use that pressure sensitivity, and the lines look better in those other apps, the ones that Samsung actually manufactured. And they released an API for the pen on this thing, which means that developers had the opportunity to develop more software for this thing. Sketchbook Pro is available for Android. I'm curious if they're going to introduce some kind of functionality to work with this pen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing just came out. So, okay, that's speculation. That's somebody saying, well, you don't know if they're going to do that. Am I going to drop $500 on a thing? I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything, first of all. But, you know, I'm trying to explain my rationale for going and hitting the purchase button on this, is that for flatting, coloring, and digital cleanup, it is an awesome, awesome thing. And it's so portable. It's so light. And just knowing that wherever I am, like tomorrow, I've got to do a 9-hour gig at the library. I've got to do Comics Are Great in the morning. I've got an hour break. And then I've got to teach a 2-hour computer coloring class, hour break, another 2-hour computer coloring class. What am I going to do with those hour breaks? I'm going to sit in my car and I'm going to work on some Photoshop stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just sit there and look at Twitter all day. So that kind of, those are the pluses that made me hit the button on it. I mean, there's other things too, like you get 50 gigs of Dropbox storage by syncing your Dropbox to it, which is, you know, that's no small potatoes. And I mean, I don't know if you even want me to go into like other things, like it has stereo speakers on it, if that's your thing. It's nice.
So do you take a break from your drawing and you hold it up like a classic boombox with a picture of a classic boombox on it?
The two tape decks
at least, yeah.
But I am mightily impressed with how different a tablet suddenly feels when you can really draw on it.
Mm-hmm. That's a huge step forward. That is awesome.
You can even set the pressure sensitivity to change opacity with pressure, so you can change the line weight with pressure and the opacity of the line with pressure, just like you can on a Wacom tablet.
Nice. So you can be controlling both aspects at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that's some, you can do some more interesting effects with digital painting with more natural physical motions than you can on the iPad, because you have to be continually adjusting these things. And even then, you're adjusting on an interval, not on a line by line basis. Every single line can contain this different information, right? Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Does it detect the angle as well as the sensitivity or the pressure?
I haven't noticed that, but like I said, I've only had it a couple of days. But I'll tell you this: this is another neat feature. It has palm rejection. So,
oh, really?
The moment that the tip of the pen, I'll just use my regular Wacom pen as an example, the moment the tip of your pen is within like a centimeter or like a half a centimeter or whatever of the screen, it rejects all other input except that pen input. So you can rest your palm on the thing and draw, which if anybody's used any kind of tablet drawing apps, that's a big deal. I was like, as I did it, I was just amazed at how I could draw very naturally. You know, I get up all tight like a kid and draw like that with my hand right on the screen, didn't affect a thing. This is an important thing to throw in too for anybody who's really excited. It's still a tablet. There are limitations. The largest I could make any Photoshop file on this thing so far that I've found is around 8 inches by 8 inches at 300 DPI. It was something like 2,400 pixels by 2,400 pixels was the largest you could make any one image on this device, in this version of Photoshop, that is. To which a guy like me who works 11x14, 600 DPI sometimes, that could be a deal breaker, right? Mom can't do a whole page on this thing now, but I can do pieces. I could take a page, and I often work in pieces. You know, as a guy who has like an 8.5x11 scanner, if I've got a bigger page, I got to scan it in chunks anyway. So I can just take the pieces, drop them into Adobe Creative Cloud, load them on the thing, flat them, maybe do some rudimentary coloring on this thing while I'm on the road, upload it back to the Creative Cloud, cobble it together in my Photoshop on my desktop, right? So it's not as a big a deal breaker as what one might automatically think, right? But I haven't played around with angles yet. I'll have to mess with that. But and the other thing is that the pressure sensitivity doesn't work with every app. I put Sketchbook Pro. It doesn't work with that yet. Although using this kind of pen in Sketchbook Pro on a tablet is really nice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I super can't wait. Sketchbook Pro, I'm not saying this as far as like, you know, look at how both old I am or how long I've been spending money on this stuff. But like I remember doing research for my Fujitsu, gosh, what was it called? Lifebook? Fujitsu Lifebooks. T4000, I think. And that was back in 2004, I believe. Okay. And I remember because of, so corporations have different relationships with other corporations. If so-and-so is supplying, you know, the printed circuit board, so-and-so is supplying is the graphics chipset, and so-and-so is supplying the memory, and so-and-so is supplying the input digitizing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes companies have secret agreements where they're like, unless someone takes apart that device, you can't know definitively what the heck is inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on this quest, and it ended when I finally got through to Fujitsu at a high enough level of technical support where they were willing to admit to me, because I was like, I won't tell anybody. I just want to know, is it Wacom inside this thing? And I think eventually when they kept updating their notebook series, or they eventually added that, because it's like, oh, it's an asset. Artists actually care. Yes, we do. Like Wacom has, yeah, there are other brands of tablets. And I know that some of them have become pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. I'm not informed on those yet, but I do know the behavior of a Wacom tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And have been using them for ages and ages. So when I was able to do that, somehow I was able to justify the purchase. I was like, okay, boom. This will be my, that was the first time I was drawing on a screen then, which, you know, that device had a pretty good, I used it for like 4 years. So.
Wow.
Anyway, but it was that finding out that darn pressure sensitivity.
Yeah.
Supplied by Wacom.
Joe Met Jill is asking on Twitter. Good thing I was watching Twitter. She says, does the tablet have a wireless card? And did you experiment on it with any tools other than Photoshop, such as Paint Tool Sai or Manga Studio? I didn't even look into yet whether this thing can do any mirroring or any kind of, like, if it can be used as just like a general input device for desktop. It's possible. I I've only had it a couple days, haven't had time to really research this. You know, guys, I'm new to Android, and one of the things that I've been dealing with right now is like, do I have to run security software on this? I've been in the Mac world a long time, and my iPhone doesn't have to run security software. So I got to start talking to my Android friends to find out, like, how do I deal with this thing? And as far as like Manga Studio or Paint Tool Sai, no, I mean, I don't even know, do they even make Android versions of those? I'll look. Right now I'm working entirely in Android on this thing because I'm just treating it as like a mobile tablet device. Now, somebody's going to ask, is this a replacement for, you know, a Cintiq? Heck no, because a Cintiq is going to have like way better resolution, way crisper fidelity and better handling of the stylus and stuff. It was made for that. But, you know, if mobility is your thing, right? Because the Cintiq, you're tethered to a desktop or a laptop, right? Whereas this is the all-in-one bit where I'm thinking of this. Here's how I would define this. This is the ultimate digital sketchbook. That's how I would define this. This is not something that I would say this is going to be your portable production studio, although I think probably some crafty people could treat it as such. I shouldn't hold it up sideways. I should actually show what the darn thing looks like with all my fingerprints all over it. But I think if you think of it as more of a portable addition to your overall studio, then I think you're onto something. But again, I've only just begun, and I'm just excited about what I found so far. And I'm excited about what it proposes. I mean, if this thing, I mean, if the tech bloggers are wrong, because everybody was predicting that this thing isn't going to, it's never going to sell 100 million copies, so why even make it? If this thing, you know, takes and they keep progressing with this technology, and if developers get on board and start making apps to take advantage of that pen, then I think we could be in for some really interesting times where artists will be looking at these Galaxy Notes with a lot of keen interest. I can see the look in Rob's eye that shows that he may be getting one in the near future.
Oh, I might be selling my mod book.
Really?
And, yeah.
I don't want to be responsible for that. Well, you lived in the Android ecosystem before, though.
Well, yeah, I build guitar fretter for Android, so yeah, I'm not a full-time Android person anymore. I mean, I did switch to the iPhone 4S from a Nexus 1 that I used for about a year and a half, and it that caused me to use Android a lot less. Essentially, I use Android when I need to build guitar fretter and get it out to there. That is a very cool visual demo you're doing.
I'm just holding up the screen so people can see. This is a drawing that I did on paper that I scanned and imported into Photoshop and then exported to Creative Cloud so that I could, well, what am I doing now? Did a spurious touch because I'm holding it weird. And yeah. Then I've just been flatting it. I've been just while I'm watching TV with Anne, just sitting with this on my lap, mm-hmm. and just flatting away, and the thing's so light and it's super responsive. There's like video demos you can watch people drawing with. But yeah, and so, and then the cool thing is I do this a lot in Photoshop. Let's see if I can do this. So I'll make selections of things. Let me move my microphone so I can be on, see what I'm doing. I'll make a lot of selections by command clicking on the layers palette and what layer I want to select. So like if I put like a lot of flats on individual layers, well, there's an option to do this in Photoshop on the tablet, where I can choose to select pixels. And I don't know if you can even see. You even see the marching ants? Mm. I can't.
I can see the marching ants.
Okay, so yeah, there's the marching ants around my selected item just by tap, just the same way as when you're working in the full version of Photoshop, and then deselect, and I'm back to painting everywhere I want to paint. So, yeah. Like I said, I got to do a full-on video review later on, but I'm very impressed with what I'm seeing, and I'm just surprised that I had such a difficult time finding people talking about it. You know,
it can be a timing thing, yeah. but I also think that our artists do not have I don't know what to say. Like, we don't have the pull is to the same extent that the mass public does. So if a device sparks the interest of essentially people who aren't actually that interested in technology, it has a way larger market. And then if you take all the people who are interested in technology and then the subset of them that are visual artist inclined, mm-hmm. that's an even smaller market. So I'm just happy Wacom still exists and seems to be doing well.
I get some, let's see, Shadowing Tronics is asking on Twitter, just started watching, have you said anything about standalone pen peripherals? No. I mean, as far as I know, there are some additional pen pieces, like you can get like a bigger holder for the pen, because like some of the tech bloggers are complaining like, oh, it's so tiny, it feels like a throwaway item, and it is tiny, but they make a bigger holder to make it more this proportion of the traditional Wacom pen. Somebody might ask like, oh, if it's a Wacom digitizer, does that mean that my other Wacom pens will work with it? Mine don't, but I'm working with an Intuos 3. It's an older pen, so it might be that newer pens might work with it just fine. Although I've got a one-year-old Bamboo upstairs that didn't work with it. So I don't know. I that's something where, again, there was a considerable dearth of information from artists using this thing. I think that the tech blogger's name is Harry McCracken. I want to give props to this guy. If that is indeed his name, I should look it up real quick. Harry McCracken, tech blogger, I should look up. Yeah. Yeah. Harry McCracken is the time.com tech blogger. Huh. Anyway, he wrote the one review where he didn't write off the pen to make a pun. He said that, like, you know, not many people may want to use a pen, but I can see artists really digging this. The one review I read with that. Everybody else was like, why would you want a pen? That's silly. That's silly. People want pens. Stop it.
That's an argument right there for just being an advocate of the visual arts and yeah. saying, draw, 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 everybody draw. There's no such thing that no one can draw. And visual communication, even in any simple abstract form, is a helpful tool.
Yeah.
Whiteboards are everywhere. And so, you know, at some point, I'm hoping pressure-sensitive tablets will be everywhere too.
Yeah, I hope so too. But if at the very least, we got this one. We've got one. And, you know, I mean, I'm so impressed with it. I'm thinking about when the time comes to upgrade my phone, switch to the Note phone too. So I have like pressure sensitivity everywhere around me. That'd be pretty awesome. But anyway, that's another bridge to cross at another time. But yeah, I hugged my wife so hard once I really got out of the hood of Photoshop. Because she talked me into it. When I was at Best Buy, I was like, I'll wait till September. It's really cool. But I'm going to wait till see what Apple's doing. And then I'll push the plunger then. She's like, no, look, I know that look in your eye. You saw what this thing can do. You did your research. This is not an impulse buy. Just get the damn thing. And then I got it. And then I played with it for 2 days. That second day, I had that breakthrough moment. It was like, oh, and I'm pointing at the screen and ran over to her and I picked her up. I was like, oh my God, thank you so much for talking me into this thing. It's the greatest.
That's awesome.
The moral of the story is I'm getting nothing for Christmas this year. So, okay, did I cover this enough? Did I say enough words about this?
I think, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the bullet points are, you did a bunch of research, and again, that's really interesting, that whole isolating, I actually tying together the curveball and that this your quest for the Wacom input on a tablet form factor.
I mispronounced Jomet Gill's name. Jomet Gill, not Jomet Jill. I'm sorry, Jomet. I've talked to you before and comics are great. You did a great appearance on the show. I pronounced your name right then. I'm a jerk. You can call me Jerry for 3 weeks now. That's my penance. Jomet Gill. Jomet Gill of, I'm going to give her a web plug too while we're at it. She's at blackinbird.com. So sorry, Jomet. Anyway, sorry, Rob. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Ah, no worries. I think that highlighting that your quest or your mystery that you wanted to solve, driven by this interest, where I think that's a pretty cool thing. And I think it's like all of us artists, we have to figure out I don't know, key helpful tools and advocate for them and all that. Like when you find what you need or you think what it, you know, if something's out there that might match what you need or you come up with a need and you don't know, and then you start searching based on it and you start peeling away and whittling things down based on options that are out there, whether it's a physical pen or something like some process you invented. I mean, I just think that's kind of a cool, it's a cool thing.
It wasn't obsessive.
I think you got to be a little obsessive to be willing to, well, let's see, in an investigation kind of mindset, right? Where it's not like you didn't just run to Best Buy, grab the tablet, run to the register either. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. I mean, really, I don't know. It's been a long time since I was on a Wacom mystery quest, but I can... I can respect that.
Black Elk Speaks. Wacom. Eric Closter of he's EJK on the Twitters. He's the guy who does all of the chat room link grabbing for the Comics Are Great show. So that's awesome to see that he's watching. He got to play with it today. I ran into him at the library, and he said even a non-artist like myself was able to pick it up and draw right away. It's pretty nice. Yeah, I won't show Eric's drawing. I still got it on the device, but yeah. So there you go. There's another review of
good.
It. So,
And it's, you know, good on all parties involved for making that thing exist and devices like it. So hopefully it gets more competition and it's a little healthy ecosystem that'll address our digital art needs.
And who knows, maybe, you know, for those who are scared, Apple's going to do something in September, mid-September, and they're going to say, hey, we decided that, you know, we can do a pen now, you know? I wouldn't hold my breath for it, but it's possible.
Yeah, there's a pressure-sensitive pen coming out for iPad that's like it's some kind of Bluetooth device and it syncs up with a certain I think they're releasing an SDK and then an app that uses all the technology, and then they're selling the pen, the brush or something. And it's not an actual brush form factor. That's a separate iPad pen. That's mm-hmm. They actually have like it's a capacitive. They do some kind of treatment to some like an actual ink brush. And it makes the brush hairs capacitive. Okay. And so you can just sort of use that. I mean, it's same thing as using your finger, but it's brush shaped, what have you. But there's an actual pressure sensitive one out that's coming out. I've been noticing these things kind of cross my radar through the Imagine FX magazine. I'm still a subscriber to that.
Imagine FX magazine.
Yep. Really good resource. I dig them.
We'll be in the show notes.
Yeah.
Man, we ate through a lot of time with that. We're already closing in on an hour. Do we have any other?
My.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I apologize to everybody. But
no apology necessary. That was worth it.
And like I said, I want to do a full review later on when I get some time, maybe after SPX this year. Hey, you know what? How about this? We'll forego the other tips for another time. We'll do a stupid helpy tips section with the next episode.
You know what? Let's do a quick tease. I promise not to get into detail.
Okay.
Well, gosh, you had a whole bunch too. Gosh, you had... let's see. So we're going to talk about some stupid helpy tips that include... it was a heavy focus on automation. And Jersey's got a bunch of things that relate to some cool web tools, if this, then that, and Pinboard and whatnot. But and I was going to delve into some of the process I use for updating the, like when I make a new screen in Guitar Fretter and when I need to export images at a new resolution and stuff, I have some scripts and whatnot that I use, a combination of Adobe Fireworks with some of the JavaScript in there, and then some Keyboard Maestro. But yeah, it's pretty deep stuff. And those are, yeah, those bullet points don't even scratch the surface. So
yeah, but yeah, there's been a lot of, you know, there. We've been really busy and there's been a lot of cool stuff going on, and I've been learning a lot of really neat stuff that I wanted to bring to the show, but I just haven't had the time to really listify them until recently. And then
listify this, brother, listify.
Oh, I gotta check if listify.com is available. But yeah, so that means we got some meat for next time to do a stupid helpy tip segment of some different kinds of cool ways to automate some things and file management stuff, backing up stuff.
Sweet.
But I wanted to get into some like news/takeaways, because going back to the beginning of the episode, you went on a trip. And before you went on that trip, I hope you don't mind me saying, you were looking a little bit ragged just before you left. And I said, you know, you look like you need this, dude. You need to get away and not think about this stuff for a little while. Not that things were going bad, but it's just, you know, when you're running on all cylinders all the time, even when you're having a good time of it, it wears you out. Are there any kind of takeaways from, you know, we talked about this, like worrying at the top of the episode. What are the takeaways from getting away and being quiet for a little bit?
It's, I think a lot of people who are very into the creative process have done a great job of summarizing this kind of thing. And I'll try to come up with it with, those references, but just firsthand, I mean, stepping away for a little bit, getting fresh perspective is so valuable. So like, let's say, so you work out and you figure you do a lot of intentional creative work day in, day out, nearly from when you wake up to when you go to sleep, for many, many, many months in a row. And then, there's a point of, you can over-optimize crap to be, not gaining the benefit from it. Eventually it's like, I was reminded of like, hey, you know what? It's a good idea to get some sleep. Hey, you know what? It's a good idea to like, take a break, because like I have room now where ideas, are naturally coming to me with less urgency and more playfulness. And, it just, yeah, I feel refreshed and, you know, a few notches more mellow. So that's a pretty darn useful thing when it comes to getting back to, my creative projects.
Mm, yeah.
I actually, I thought, truthfully, I was gone an extra, let's see. So Monday I was not out on the shores of Lake Superior. I was actually home. And instead of jumping back into it, which is what I plan to do. And normally I don't know, I give myself the high five at the end of the day or whatever, when I follow that plan and I'm like, okay, sweet, I got those things done. I actually just threw my plans out the window and I played Mass Effect. I solved the dang thing finally, Mass Effect 3. But
did you like the ending?
I got the lame ending. I really respect it. Actually, I have a lot of thoughts on that. That's a whole different podcast, probably.
Oh, marking it's
very well done series, whatnot. But yeah, I feel like I want to go back in to get the better ending.
You know, I just watched recently The People versus George Lucas, that documentary about how everybody's lives were destroyed by the Star Wars prequels. and I was reminded of the Mass Effect 3 thing, because it brings up that whole question again about when you put something into the world, who owns it? Who has the right to say what's right and what's wrong about it, right? That's an interesting question. That's a question that we've been wrestling with for the past probably 12 years, right?
Yeah.
Since sharing on the internet really kicked off into high gear from the public's point of view. But I think about that, you know, was it a bunch of whiny fanboys? Was it a bunch of entitled fans? Or was it that, is it that the fans make the product what it is by supporting the product, and therefore there's an obligation to the fans? I don't have a position on that. I just think it's an interesting question. You could look at this People versus George Lucas as the story of a guy who loses it and goes back on everything he stood for early on in his career. Or you could look at it as a bunch of whiny, whiny fanboys who just cannot move on with their lives and realize it's just a story. You could look at it with both lenses and it's the same story, right? And both people could make a compelling case for their point of view on that one. To quote Obi-Wan Kenobi, from a certain point of view. So anyway, that's a topic that I'm dog-earing here. Mass Effect 3 ending and People versus George Lucas.
Cool.
So People versus GL. You know, it's there's a book I've been reading, which I'm probably going to wind up talking about a lot in some future episodes as well, called Stumbling on Happiness, by Daniel Gilbert. And one of the things he talks about in this book that I thought was really interesting, amongst a lot of other things, is a lot of like how happiness works in our brains and how our memory works, and a lot of interesting studies done to sort of disprove some ways we think about things. And I had it at the ready to talk about why we unbox things, because there's a whole section in there about how we rewrite our histories, even recent histories, to maximize our happiness in looking back on it, right? So it's like, even when you go through a bad relationship, you go, oh, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, right? Like people who get into
exactly. Well, I needed that experience.
I needed that experience, right? And there's like all these studies done showing like how like people will say all these different diseases and medical conditions as being worse than death, but yet the people who are in those conditions don't try to commit suicide. And a lot of them will even say that it completely changed my perspective on life. I'm glad of the experience. I wouldn't change it for anything, right? And so I wouldn't call it a cynical book, but it's a splash of cold water in how our memory works. And it got me thinking about unboxing and how recounting what you did after the fact is no guarantee that that's actually what was going through your head. It's an estimation. It's a dart thrown at the board, right?
Yeah, totally. That's why it's good to have, multiple ways, multiple sort of, measures and ways to sort of triangulate what you're trying to get at, and knowing that it's still going to be imprecise, but it'll have some more repeatable discipline around it. So
good word, triangulation. Yeah, man, you're just full of it today, Rob.
I'm always full of it, Jersey.
triangulating our process. We'll have to dog ear that one for future talking. Cool. I promised last week that I was going to explain how I was going to be in a parade.
Yeah, absolutely. We cannot drop that ball. What is this? So it was, it was totally a bomb that you just dropped. It was like, yeah, I'm going to be in a parade, and it has to do with my comic. So what in the world?
Okay, let me back up. I mean, that's a bomb to drop and then to like run out of the room, because then it sets expectations like super high. Like, oh my God, he's going to be in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, next to Justin Bieber and Santa Claus. No, I'm going to be in a tiny town called Chelsea, which you may have heard me talk about before, because that has been the home for Kids Read Comics for 2 years. Ann Arbor this year, and Ann Arbor next year, possibly Chelsea next fall. We'll see. So I do some work with an organization there called Seriously, and I've told this story before about a comic that I create for them 2 years now. I've created two comics. I'm getting ready to get to work on the third one. Where they came to me and said, hey, you're a guy who likes to write comics for kids. You like to write comics for kids with a good message in them of some sort. Could you do that for us? We want you to just have carte blanche, blank check, do whatever you want, but we want your story to be about X, right? So the latest one I did was they wanted it to be about working with adults and then courage versus cowardice, right? Like having integrity in the face of fear kind of thing. So I wrote the story and I created a whole cast of characters, awesome, which I've shared on the internet. You can find them on my Google Plus. There's a gallery there of some of the characters that I created for them. Dame Lady Cat is a good one. One of my favorites.
By the way, there's some really great, we should try to link to some High Adventure Dailies, or at least not High Adventure Daily, whatever. Sorry.
Oh, Thunder Punch Daily.
Yeah. Thunder Punch Daily. That's anyway, bunch of, great art casts that came out of the Art and Story, ecosystem. I'm going to overuse the word ecosystem today, I guess. Thunder Punch Daily. I mean, you covered some of the process behind that, and I did.
I forgot about that. I was
genesis of some of those characters, and
yeah, I did. I chronicled quite a bit of my thinking process on that. So anyway, so this organization, this nonprofit organization that's all about like promoting healthy attitudes in kids, they're participating in this parade. Well, since I created this comics universe for their organization, they're using them as mascots. I mean, I just got an invitation to a party for like appreciation party for the organization. Dame Lady Cat was all over the thing. It's like, you are cordially invited to this party. And there's Dame Lady Cat standing there looking very proper. And so they're really using the art and the characters to, promote their brand. So they email me and they say, we're going to have a float in the parade, and we're designing it to be the good guy's headquarters and the bad guy's headquarters from the comic, and there's kids who are going to cosplay as the characters in the comic. We want you to ride on the float. Would you be interested in that? And I didn't have to think for a second. I was like, I'd be an idiot not to want to sit on a float that, based on characters and worlds that I designed. Of course I'm going to sit on that float, and I'm going to be waving like a fool. I'm going to try to get video. I'm going to try to get video of me going by on this float and seeing the kids dressed as Dame Lady Cat and Dino Gator and Turnbuckle Tootweiler and all the characters from the comic. But, it was one of those things where I had to laugh for 5 minutes because, you could look at it a lot of ways, just like the people versus George Lucas. Here's the way I'm choosing to look at it. I'm going to be sitting on a float in a parade because of my work in comics. That's pretty cool. So,
yeah, that congrats, man. That is so exciting. Like how what great feedback, and kids are dressing up as your characters also. That's super cool.
I posted video on my Google Plus feed of when the comic came out, the latest issue. the organization was kind enough to invite me to come to the elementary school where the comics were being delivered to 500 kids, and I got to do a presentation on the comic. And so I had a select group of different kids from the elementary school, like second through fifth grade, do an interpretive reading of the entire book while it was projected on a wall behind me. So 500 kids, I get to deliver the book. I get to hand deliver the book to my audience, as it were, and have the kids put on a play of the book. Talk about rewarding, intensely rewarding. I'm loving this project so much. And by the way, did I tell you that they pay me to do this stuff? This is amazing. So I don't get to complain ever again. I don't care if my arm has gangrene and there's an axe on the side of my head. I don't get to complain.
Yeah, exactly. You've filled your fun lifetime fun meter.
So. Yeah. After this year, you know, everything's going to fall apart. My eyes are going to drop out of the socket. My legs are going to fall off. And then I'm going to find out that everybody who ever professed to care about me really has been harboring deep resentment towards me. But you know what I'm going to say? Yeah, it was worth it.
Yeah, it's okay. Exactly. I you know what? I needed that experience, right?
I needed that experience. I learned so much about myself. And then the other one is that I'm going to be doing the Ignatz Awards at the Small Press Expo in Bethesda, Maryland, September 15th and 16th, I think. So
super cool. MC Jersey.
What?
MC Jersey. Is that, yeah. Is that a new moniker we can use now?
Oh, no. Can guys call themselves MC when they talk like me? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we're going to push up the ceiling really hard, everybody. It's going to be a good time. No, it was, you know, I don't like to throw the word honor around all that much, but it was an honor to be asked. How cool is that? That I'm going to get to, you know, introduce all the introduce the presenters who, you know, announced the winners for the Ignatz Awards at SPX. Really cool that they thought of me of all people to do it. So all I've been saying about it is I'm going to do my best. Gambare, gambate, that kind of thing. And did you have some news too, Rob?
Let's see. How do I? I did share that via Twitter and whatnot. But I thought it'd be good to mention on the podcast. I mean, along the lines of being interested in being a teaching artist, and well, you know, we do things. I'm one of the people who contributes to the efforts on the workshops at Lean Into Art. Let's see. Some fellow artists in the Twin Cities know of my interest in this sort of area, and they actually know I'm a technology focused artist, right? And have a, you know, big history in web design. And I actually was asked to interview for a position at it's for this. There's a fine arts interdisciplinary resource. I think that's the program. And there's a whole high school that's essentially fine arts focused. And then this is so I'll be teaching the web design class for that, which is actually offered at MCAD, Minneapolis College of Art and Design. So yeah, that's crazy. It's exciting. I was honored to be asked to.
Congratulations, Rob. That is so cool.
Yeah. And I'll be doing it. So now I'm working on a 12-week syllabus for this course.
Now, can I quote my friend Mary Jo and say, you know, you're not sticking to any of that, right?
Oh, I know. But you need to get that on paper. I've got some interesting ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is so cool. I mean, going back to our talk about roles versus goals, this was a goal that you set a long time ago, like 8 months, a year ago, right? And you're doing it.
Oh, yeah.
How satisfying is that, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's anytime I hit a certain goal off of one of those larger lists, I'm reminded of, I think an old Simpsons episode where they said Egg Bagley Jr. drives a car powered by his own sense of self-satisfaction.
Self-satisfaction. That's right.
Exactly. I feel like I'm ready to fuel that vehicle. So
that deserves the two-fisted over the shoulder baseball. Congratulations.
Yeah. So that's cool. And yep.
And good on MCAD for having a program like that where high schoolers can actually learn HTML. Because what, I mean, really, going back to when we were kids, when we were learning like microcomputers in class, right? Where it's like, this is how you make a spreadsheet. This is how you do a word processing document.
In this class, it's like all the kids actually have laptops. And it's totally wild. It's definitely a whole set of learning programs, which one of them is comics, actually, by the way. I'll be learning more about the overall school and how this program fits within it and whatnot. But I believe technology is not an uncommon thing spread throughout, which is super cool.
I'm just glad that they're keeping up to date on it, because what's more important for kids to be learning right now than some kind of understanding of HTML coming out? I think that's like, should be right up there with home ec, right? Like, here's how to balance your checkbook. Whatever you do nowadays, right? Balance your checking account. Here's how HTML works, right?
Yeah. Well, let's see here. My course is actually going to cover, sort of user-centric design approach to web design as well. The description is, what makes a web presence useful, usable, and fun over being frustrating and difficult to learn and use? In web design, we will explore designing and building a web presence. Learn and practice an approach to web design that brings together multiple perspectives to form one useful web presence: the user's needs, the web as a platform, and the needs of the web presence's author. Students will complete a final web design project and accompanying commentary. Topics covered: user-centric design, HTML, CSS, and web design critique.
Super cool.
There you go.
Okay, so here's where we wrap.
I wouldn't be surprised if someday Lean Into Art offers a similar course, by the way.
I was going to say. That was a screeching and screeching for us to make a reference to leanintoart.com/workshops, because I'm sure somebody out there listening right now is going like, man, I need to move to Ann Arbor and or Minneapolis because all the cool stuff is happening right there. Well, guess what? The cool stuff is happening right on the internet at leanintoart.com/workshops. If you think this stuff sounds interesting and compelling, man, Rob's got a bunch of classes in there already that teaches this stuff. So you can check those out there. What would be a good one to check out right now, Rob? I'm going to go there right now to leanintoart.com.
Honestly, I think, let's see, you have a class on coloring in Photoshop Elements, yeah, that I think is in reference to, you know, the topic of coloring and Photoshop and whatnot earlier mentioned.
$25 for that one. That's it.
Yeah. Honestly, it's worth shouting out to some classes. Well, a class that's going to be happening soon. You have James, Rack My Book, which, I mean, one of our interests is to cover. I like to use the word system, and you know what, we have our interest in you want to, you know, learn and grow in your skills, but then you want to engage in some kind of trade with those skills. And those are all different important things to work on. And engaging in trade is like, you get into business concerns and whatnot. And so we have a couple of classes by Tyler James of Tyler James Comics that he does he's an accomplished artist and writer, and actually has a huge history of practicing the business aspect of it as well. So he's got one class that's on tabling called Absolute Consense that is available for download right now. And then this new one that's coming up called Rack My Book, which focuses on the
successful micro distribution strategies of a maverick independent comic book publisher.
Exactly. Yep. And yeah, he's sharing from experience the strategies he's used, just like during his course that focuses, or workshop that focuses on tabling, the book distribution one is about his experience in getting the Comics Tribe comics out on bookstore shelves. So good stuff.
That one's coming up pretty soon. So you can find that at leanintoart.com/workshops. And then, you know, coming up soon is Rob's Underwater Tomato Ninja workshop, which is going to be a 3-session workshop on making games in HTML5, which, you know, I think HTML5 is another one of those skills that needs to be learned by more people. That's the platform of the future. People say, is it going to be apps? Is it going to be Facebook? Is it going to be social media? Is it going to be making apps for Google+? No, it's going to be making HTML5 stuff, you know? Well, what about like the Nook store, the Kindle store? HTML5 is where all this stuff is going to live in the future.
It's at the heart of it. And what's interesting is you could look at your efforts in, you know, working in HTML5 as a way to then reach other platforms, because there's a lot of ways to repackage and help distribute things you build with those technologies. And that there's more and more offerings there all the time. You can build something in HTML5 and then put it today on in the Google Web Store, Google Web Market. I forget what its nickname is, but Google Marketplace. Anyway,
Google Play.
You can put it for sale there, and there's other places too, like Pokey. That's another wrapper technology for HTML5. That they have a kind of they have their own app store. It's a whole, like, once you solve some problems or make a cool game or an interactive thing in HTML5, it's possible to repackage and share elsewhere. And who knows? I mean, if there's interest, we may do a course on that sometime too.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, the Underwater Tomato Ninja would be a great way to get under the hood of it in a fun way. Well then, you know what I'm going to say is if you don't want to drop money on a workshop, but still want to give us a pat on the back for this episode. If you thought this was good stuff, the thoughtful stuff, and if you thought it was exciting or funny, or if you had any kind of positive experience that I am not summarizing at this point, what you could do is you could go to iTunes, give us a star review, for the Lean Into Art show. I am going to put this Galaxy Note, a link to the Amazon sale Amazon listing for it, and I'm going to use an affiliate link. If you decide that you have to have this, and if you're going to order it through Amazon, that's another way you could thank us. Order it with the affiliate link. We get a kickback on that. That'd be a way that you're not buying a class, but you're getting a really cool tablet device, and you're giving us a little thank you for bringing it to your attention. That'd be another way you could say thanks to us. Why am I doing this? Am I just standing with my hand out? No, we waited till the end. You guys could skip over this stuff the moment you started hearing us say leanintoart.com/workshops. We're just saying to the true faithful, to the people who really believe in what we're doing, to the people who are signed on, to the choir, to the bass, as they say, right?
You know, listify, brother.
Listify. We're just reminding you of the ways that you could help us out if we did a good job today. You know, you don't have to tip the waiter, but when the waiter does a good job, sometimes you tip okay, right? So there you go. All right, Rob, thanks for doing this show with me. Always have fun.
Man, my pleasure, Jersey. Thank you.
We got a lot to talk about next time.
Thanks for going on your quest and sharing your story that rocked. Thank you.
Now, there's more to share yet, but yeah. But I'm excited about the future again. So,
cool.
I mean, technology just fixes everything, right? Yeah. But,
totally.
Yeah. All right, so... Okay, well, thanks everybody for downloading, listening, and watching the live stream. We'll be streaming next Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Information will be at leanintoart.com and where to find us when we do it. Mm-hmm. And we want to thank everybody in the chat and in the unofficial web chat, the IRC. And that was...
webchat.freenode.net, and we're hanging out in the room called Lean Into Art, all one word.
And that was just Robert like C. who set that up for us. X Hunter KO on the Twitters, if you want to follow him. Set that up for us, and thanks Robert, we appreciate that. So okay, so until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.